Now, why does the UK abandon dying people and outsource this problem to facilities in Switzerland? While legislators across the USA, Canada and Australia have drafted laws to give dying people choice over how and when they die. Well, Sarah Wootton is the CEO of the campaign group Dignity in Dying, and she explains why assisted dying's time has come. Great to have you on the show, Sarah.
Nice to be here, Selena. Thanks for having me.
So, it's a subject that's a bit emotive. Not many people want to talk about it, but you do believe it's time for change.
I do. I think we absolutely have to rethink how we die, because the current system actually makes gods doctors, but it keeps patients as supplicants. So I think that we need a kind of a complete rethink, really, about how the old ways work, and we need to reconsider it. So, as you said, rather than abandoning dying people, we at the moment people have various difficult choices. If they can afford it, they can go to Switzerland. You can starve and dehydrate yourself to death. That's perfectly lawful. Obviously, some people do suffer horribly at the end of life, and we've done a number of reports at Dignity in Dying that have shown that. And then people are asking other loved ones for help, you know, to end their life. So I think that what we need to do is really reconsider how we give people the ability to be masters of their own fate. They need the building blocks of control. And that's what we argue in Last Rites.
Yeah, and of course, asking loved ones is also putting them in a very difficult position, isn't it?
Yeah, because the blanket ban on assisted dying is a serious crime in England and Wales. So, you know, it's punishable by up to 14 years in prison. And the idea that people can do this sort of thing easily is absolute rubbish. So, you know, it costs a lot of money to get to Switzerland. As you say, you'd have to die knowing that your loved ones could be investigated and prosecuted, possibly. The critical thing, I think, that the current blanket ban does is stop people having good conversations about how they want to die. And I think that's part about reframing dying. So it's about, you know, talking about it. You said at the beginning, Selena, that people don't want to talk about it, but actually our evidence from dying people, and we've helped, you know, 56,000 people plan ahead through Dignity's sister charity, is that when dying becomes a reality for somebody, they do want to talk about it. They do want to plan and talk about how they're going to die when that moment comes. So I think good conversations are essential, and feeling in control is another thing that's very important.
Yes, and nobody wants to see a loved one suffer. It's the same old adage, isn't it? They don't let animals suffer, but they let humans, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, an example of somebody who starved and dehydrated themselves to death was a pioneering pain doctor who was the first president of the Royal College of Anaesthetists, Professor Michael Rosen. And he was dying. He had end-stage Parkinson's disease and cancer that had metastasized. But, you know, all he could do was stop eating and drinking in hospital. And his daughter, Amanda, we tell his story in the book, and she said that she found him walking up and down corridors on a Zimmer frame, trying to burn extra calories to accelerate the process. I mean, how can that be acceptable, but shortening your death through assisted dying is not? So, you know, we've all got to ask the hard questions about how we've arrived at this place, why starving and dehydrating yourself to death and double effect, where doctors can prescribe enough pain relief that it will cause somebody's death, but they can't do it with the intention of doing so. I mean, you know, what a weird example is that? I mean, can you think of anything else where the law dividing what's seen as good practice and what's considered a serious crime is so fine, and it rests totally on what the intentions of the perpetrator are as defined by them? There are no safeguards in that.
But is it open to abuse, Sarah? I mean, if a person hasn't really got the capacity to make that decision, and maybe a relative, it's in their interest for that person to pass away, and, you know, isn't it open for abuse sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, everything's open for abuse. So, you know, obviously safeguards have to be there. Just to be clear, the law we're calling for, which is the one in Australia, probably as of next month in New Zealand, it's the one in the US, is around terminal illness and mental competence, which is defined as an individual being aware of the implications of what they're doing. So, for example, it would have to be the individual who takes the drugs themselves, the medication. That would be a sort of the final safeguard. So this isn't about euthanasia where a doctor takes the final act. It's about the patient taking the final act. But nobody who's calling for law change is arguing that this should be a free-for-all or that there shouldn't be tight safeguards. This would be the most safeguarded law in the world. It would have the oversight of two doctors, two independent doctors. It would have the oversight of a judge as well. So the point about these laws are, 150 million people worldwide have got access to them now, is that the transparency and the scrutiny of decision making that they create are much, much safer than the kind of, you know, the sort of grey areas, the sort of fudgy grey area at the moment, where people are just doing things behind locked doors by themselves, and there are no safeguards there. So, for example, Britain's going once every week to Switzerland to have an assisted death, and the only safeguard in that process is a possible investigation of the people who accompanied them once they've died. I mean, that's not a proper safeguard.
No, I didn't think. I thought if you did it, if you did Dignitas, if you went to Switzerland, then you were okay, but you can still be investigated then.
Yes, definitely, because it does count as possibly assisting or encouraging a suicide. So people have been investigated, and you know it's absolutely not a free fall. We took a legal case called the Debbie Purdy legal case, which caused the then Director of Public Prosecutions, Keir Starmer, to issue guidance on what were the factors that the CPS would take into account, and that shows that if people who compassionately assist are more unlikely to be prosecuted, but it doesn't rule it out at all. And then you've got to look at a case like Mavis Eccleston, which we talk about in the book. So Mavis helped her husband, Dennis Eccleston, who had end-stage bowel cancer, to take his own life with drugs that he'd stockpiled. And Mavis was charged with his murder and manslaughter by the Crown Prosecution Service in this country. So, wow. And it was only after a kind of 18-month trial that she was eventually acquitted by a jury. But that was a horrendous process for the family and for Mavis, because they'd just seen their dad, you know, die of bowel cancer, and then they thought their mum was going to go to prison for murder.
Yeah.
And the CPS said at the trial that her case wasn't the place to look at the issues on assisted dying, but that Parliament needed to look at it. And the courts have said the same thing, and police and crime commissioners have also said the same thing. So, you know, the law needs to change. I mean, there's a referendum in New Zealand, Selena. It's next month in October. And it's, you know, it seems the polling is looking very encouraging. The bill's already passed through the New Zealand Parliament. It looks very likely that all terminally ill New Zealand citizens will have access to this law soon.
So what exactly is the law then, Sarah? Because I know it's different in Scotland, but what's the law in England, Wales and Northern Ireland currently?
Well, they're different in all three places, actually. So in England and Wales, it's around Section 2 of the Suicide Act, which explicitly, and that was made in 1961. So suicide used to be illegal. So if you didn't manage to take your own life, then you would be prosecuted for attempting it before 1961. And then in 1961, when they decriminalised suicide, they criminalised the crime of assisted suicide. And it's encouragement or assistance is prohibited by Section 2 of the 1961 Act. So that's England and Wales. And in Scotland, there is no law against assisted suicide nominally. It's not included in their legislation at the moment, but they would they prosecute under the law of culpable homicide. So that's how they take that forward. And there's in terms of Northern Ireland, there's a sort of a similar sort of law to the 1961 Act. So it's around a blanket ban on assistance or encouragement to suicide. I mean, talking of Ireland, there's a really interesting debate coming up next week. Well, it's actually on Thursday this week and a possible vote next week. So a member of their assembly has brought a law for mental competence and terminal illness again. And he's basically, it's got the support of Sinn Féin and the Labour Party, the two sort of big Republic of Ireland parties, have said that they're possibly interested in moving the issue to a committee, a government committee, or maybe a citizens' assembly. And you'll remember that there was a sort of the big debate in 2018 about the decriminalisation of abortion in the Republic of Ireland, and they held a referendum on that, which came back with 66% of the public supporting choice at the end of life. So I think, and also they've also legalised gay marriage as well there. So I think that, you know, it's an interesting context for assisted dying to be debated in.
Yes, things do change. Times do change, and we see it all the time. As you say, you know, different rules on marriage. I mean, you've only got to look at the suffragettes and how things were different back then, and how maybe it is a time for change. I was reading that 84% of the public do support a change in the law, but does that include doctors as well?
If you poll doctors, they have more of a diversity of views. So the kind of a good poll to look at would be the recent Royal College of GPs poll, where they polled them on whether they were supportive or what they thought the policy of the Royal College of GPs should be. And less than half, 46%, said they thought it should be opposed. And the rest of them, so I think it was 41% said they thought it should be supportive, and the remainder said they thought it should be neutral. So a majority of GPs felt that the Royal College of GPs should remove its opposed stance. The Royal College of Physicians moved to neutrality last year after it also polled and found that, again, a majority of physicians were supportive of this, of their body being neutral in the debate rather than taking a stance. And then the really big poll is of the British Medical Association. So Dignity in Dying forced the BMA to do a poll of its membership by taking a motion to its annual conference last summer, and we won it. And so they've done the poll. They got a very good response rate. About 30,000 of their 160,000 members responded, but we don't yet know the results of that, Selena, but that's going to be launched before the end of November. Again, I think it will show a kind of, you know, not as overwhelming a support from GPs, but I think much more mixed support. But from that perspective, it's around making sure the bodies are neutral, but also, and we say this in the book, remembering that GPs or doctors generally don't tend to be at the vanguard of social change anyway. So remember that doctors opposed the NHS, they opposed abortion, they opposed the contraceptive pill initially as well. I mean, they even opposed originally pain relief in childbirth.
Oh, crikey.
So, you know, I think they take time to catch up with what their patients are saying. And I think assisted dying is a very, very good example of that. We need to listen. Doctors need to listen to what patients are asking them.
Yeah. And of course, Dignity in Dying, you're the CEO of that. And you did mention your sister charity. Is that Compassion in Dying?
Yes, that's right. That's Compassion in Dying. And we provide Compassion, because I'm CEO of both. And Compassion provides legal information and advice on the current law and how to get choice at the end of life under the current law. So it's the biggest provider of living wills in the UK. And it's got, you know, we've got a nurse-led information line. And if you have problems, if you've just been diagnosed with a terminal disease, if you want to ask questions about how you're going to die, what the decisions are that you'd like to make, if you want to talk that through with somebody, if you want to codify your wishes legally, then Compassion in Dying, we're the people to talk to about that as well. So they're sort of both sides of the same coin, if you like. And I think you were absolutely right when you said earlier that assisted dying will be legalised, and that change will come because, you know, and then I think the law will be changed, and that will become one of the choices that people can make at the end of life. But I think The times of just leaving it to your doctor to decide for you have gone now. It's really around having good conversations and giving people the building blocks of control, really, about how they want to die.
Yes, yes. I firmly believe it should be every person's own right. It's your body, it's your mind. You should have the right to make that decision.
Yes. I mean, people can't demand sedation at the moment. So again, that has to be a doctor's decision on sedation. So again, another story in the book is Fiona Strong, she's a young woman in her early 30s, and she had metastasized cancer of the eye. And she was in a hospice with her mum, and they said that her symptoms were very bad. So to control them, they would sedate her, put her under until her disease killed her. And they said goodbye because she was going to, have the anaesthetic and go under. But she woke up 20 minutes later, in pain and confused and distressed. And that went on for 5 days, Selena. So she had to, her mum, Susan, had to say goodbye to her only daughter 7 times over 5 days, which is an appalling state of affairs.
It's barbaric, really, isn't it?
It's torture. Yeah. It really is torture. Yeah. And as Susan said to us, and why is that acceptable? That taking medication, why couldn't Fiona have had the medication in one lot, and that would have made sure that she'd have died within 15 minutes of taking it? But why was it better morally that she had her death extended over 5 days?
Mm.
I mean, even the hospice nurses were crying, and it was an appalling thing. But people shouldn't have to go through that. And the evidence from overseas shows that they don't need to.
No, and as I said before, you wouldn't do that to a dog or a cat, would you?
No, and of course people can ask. I mean, that's the whole point. This isn't something we're doing to somebody else. It's about what patients say. One interesting thing, I don't know if you picked it up from the book, but it's really about having the option. So 40% of people in the US who get the prescription don't actually go on to use it. It's just knowing you've got the option. It's just knowing you've got that way out, that safety valve, allows you to keep going. And not having it makes people die earlier than they otherwise would. So, for of course, going to Switzerland, you have to travel much earlier than you would because you've got to be well enough to get there.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
So, and people are just forced to sort of take these sort of desperate decisions because of the blanket ban, because it's preventing people, having open and honest conversations and putting people in invidious situations. It's really got to change. It's absolutely appalling. And we're all going to face it one day.
Exactly.
So we need to have that choice.
Yeah, well, it is a watch this space. Keep battling on with Parliament and let us know how you get on. Please, please let us know. Keep us updated. The book is called Last Rites, The Case for Assisted Dying, and it's by Sarah Wotton and Lloyd Riley. We're selling it right now on our website, tre.radio. And Sarah, can you just give us the addresses, the web addresses of your two charities?
Yeah, so Dignity in Dying is just dignityindying.org.uk, and Compassion in Dying is a similar format, just Compassion in Dying, all one word, .org.uk.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show with us today.
Thanks, Selena.
Take care. Bye bye.